From beyond it came a horrible sobbing and scratching. And now and then the voice of Grace Poole. But I had not a time to think nor become frightened.
Jane, I must get Dr. Rivers. That means leaving you alone here with this gentleman. If you'll sponge the blood as I do now, please.
Yes.
If he regains consciousness, don't you speak to him on any account. Is that clear, Jane?
Yes, yes.
Whatever happens, do not move from here or open that door.
No.
I'll be back as quickly as I can. Here's your patient, Doctor. Jane, you are all right.
Yes, I'm all right. He's regained consciousness.
You have 20 minutes, Doctor, for dressing the wound and getting the patient out of here.
So you told me.
Wait a minute.
Oh, Mason.
I've done for it.
That's nonsense. You've lost a little blood, that's all.
She sank her teeth into me like a tiger.
Ah.
It'd be better if you don't talk and let me get to work.
She said she'd drain my heart.
Be silent, Mason. Forget it. Jane.
Yes, sir.
Go downstairs quietly on both the side passage door. You'll find Dr. Rivers' carriage there. See that the driver's ready to leave the moment we come down.
Yes, sir, yes.
Can I help you, Doctor?
No. This will be painful, Mason. It can't be helped.
I told you not to come here, Mason.
I thought I could have done some good.
You thought.
Lie still, please.
I've tried so long to avoid exposure. It'll make very certain it doesn't come now. Dr. Rivers will take you to his home. You'll remain there until you're quite well, Mason.
Edward.
Yes.
Let her be taken care of.
I will.
Please let her be treated as tenderly as may be.
I do my best and have done it. Will do it. Yet would to God there were an end to all this. Well, they're gone, Jane.
Yes. And it's daylight again.
I promised. I turned to you for help. I didn't know it would be so soon.
I was thankful I was here.
You could walk for a moment in the garden, Jane. It's so fresh and clean there.
Mr. Rochester. Will Grace Poole live here
Grace
still?
Grace Poole, yes, Grace Poole will stay. Don't ask for explanations. Just believe me when I tell you there are good reasons for it. You're my friend, Jane, aren't you?
I like to serve you in everything that's right.
And if I asked you to do something you thought was wrong, what then? But I know the answer. Very quietly, you'd say, oh, no, sir, that's impossible.
Would I?
Jane, imagine you were a young man. Thoughtless, spoiled since childhood. Imagine yourself in a far-off land. Conceive that you there commit a capital error. One that cuts you off from all the possibility of human joys. And then suddenly, imagine that fate offers you the chance of regeneration and true happiness. Are you justified in overleaping the obstacles of mere custom? Tell me, Jane. Are you justified?
How can I answer that? Every conscience must come to its own decision.
But if it can't come to a decision, if you're afraid that you may bring shame to what you most cherish, or destroy what you most desire to protect. Oh, Jane, don't you curse me for plaguing you like this.
No, I don't curse you.
Give me your assurance on that, your hand. Your fingers are cold. They were warmer last night. Jane, will you watch with me again another night?
Whenever I can be useful.
For instance, the night before I'm married, will you sit with me then?
Are you going to be married soon?
Sometime. Why not?
But what makes you think he's in the stable? Mr. Rochester often writes before breakfast.
Oh, what a place to be looking for.
Mr. Bell.
And the delectable Miss Ingram. Blanche!
Edward, is that you?
Uncle Edward!
What do you mean by running off like this so early?
Excuse me, Jane, and what do you mean by rising so early?
A correct host, as it may be, yes.
My dear Blanche, when will you learn? I never was correct and never shall be.
Come along.
Well, why do you stop, Blanche? I don't know the rest of it.
Edward, does that person wish to see you?
Person? Oh, come in, Miss Eyre.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I did not know you were occupied.
I'm sure Miss Ingram will excuse me for a moment.
Oh, certainly. But don't forget, Edward, you promised to show me the estate.
Oh, I shall. Don't leave. Well, Jane.
I overheard some of the guests after luncheon. They mentioned that you were leaving with them in the morning, and I wished to ask for a reference, sir.
Reference? What the deuce do you want a reference for?
to get a new place.
Oh.
You as much as told me that you were going to be married.
Well?
In which case, Adele would likely go off somewhere to school.
I see. Adele must go off to school, and you must go to the devil. Is that it?
I hope not, sir.
The time comes for you to get a new situation, I'll get one for you. Do you hear?
Very well. I may not see you again before you leave. Goodbye, Mr. Rochester.
Goodbye, Miss Eyre. Jane, is that all? Seems so dry and stingy. Won't you do more than say goodbye? Oh, your hand. You'll shake my hand. Goodbye, Jane. And now you've seen it all, Blanche. The fields, the forest, and now the garden.
Such a beautiful place you're spawning.
As a dungeon, it serves its purpose.
Dungeon? It's a paradise. A haven.
Oh, yes.
A haven of peace and love.
Who's talking of love? Distraction is what a man needs. Distraction to keep him from peering too closely into the mysteries of his heart.
I sometimes wonder if you have a heart, Edward.
Have I ever said anything to make you believe that I have?
Edward, are you never serious?
Never more than at this moment, except perhaps when I'm eating my dinner.
Really? You can be so revoltingly coarse at times.
Can I ever be anything else?
Would I have come to Thornfield if I thought you couldn't?
Well, now we have something to consider. First, Mr. Rochester's revoltingly coarse and as ugly as sin.
Edward, I never
Secondly, he's extremely careful never to talk of love or marriage. However, and this is the third point, the Ingrams are somewhat impoverished, whereas the revolting Mr. Rochester has an assured income of $8,000 a year. Now, in view of all this, what attitude shall Miss Blanche be expected to take? From what I know of the world, I'd surmise she'd ignore the coarseness, etc., until such time as Mr. Rochester is safely hooked.
How dare you!
No horseplay.
I've never been so insulted in all my life.
Blanche, I've just paid you the enormous compliment of being completely honest.
You're a boor and a cur. Leave me at once.
Well, they've gone, Jane. My guests have all gone. We're alone again.
I will be leaving too, sir.
Soon to forget me.
Oh, I'll never forget you. You know that. I see the necessity of going.
Hmm?
It's like looking on the necessity of death.
Where do you see that necessity?
In your bride?
In my bride, I have no bride.
But you will have.
Oh, yes, I will.
So you think I could stay here to become nothing to you? Do you think because I'm poor and obscure and plain that I'm soulless and heartless? Well, I have as much heart and soul and fully as much as you have. And if God had gifted me with wealth and beauty, I shouldn't have made it as difficult for you to leave me as it is for me now to leave you. There, I spoke of my heart. Now let me go.
Jane. Jane, you strange, you almost unearthly thing.
No.
You that I love as my own flesh.
Oh, don't mock me.
I have no love for Blanche. It's you I want. Answer me, Jane, quickly. Oh. Say, Edward, I'll marry you. Say it.
Let me look at
you. Say it, Jane. Say, Edward, I'll marry you.
Edward, I'll marry you.
God forgive me.
Edward.
God forgive me.
After a brief intermission, Mr. DeMille presents Orson Welles and Loretta Young in Act Three of Jane Eyre. And now, the lady next door has just come into Mrs. Brown's kitchen.
Hello, Mary. I won't stay a minute. I just cut some roses from the garden, and I thought you'd like to have some.
Oh, how gorgeous. Thanks ever so much. Sit down. I'll be with you as soon as I finish scraping out this roasting pan.
Mary, you're not throwing that grease away, are you?
Why, there's only a spoonful or two of old black grease here. It's hardly worth the trouble of saving.
Trouble? Why, Mary, that's vital war material. That little bit of fat could make enough vaccine for dozens of soldiers. Or sulfur ointment for wounded men's burns.
But I thought there was plenty of fat now. It's been taken off the ration list.
Darling, that doesn't make the need one tiny bit less urgent. You see, those fresh new fats are needed for food. And the government doesn't want to take food fats unless it becomes absolutely necessary. The point is that to make medicines and war supplies, used fats are just as good. So it's up to you and me and every other woman to keep those used fats coming in. Mary, at the ration board meeting yesterday, they said the need was terribly serious.
And that's a fact. Now, on the eve of invasion, the need for war supplies and medicines is the greatest our country has ever faced. Think of it. By turning in your used cooking fats, you actually help to make more parachutes, synthetic rubber, and life-saving medicines, such as insulin, tannic acid, and heart stimulant. Every drop you scrape from your frying pan or skim from soup is precious.
I didn't realize that when I throw away even a little used fat, I may be depriving our men of some vital thing they need. I'll save every scrap after this.
Yes, and turn it in quickly to your butcher. He pays 4 cents and 2 red ration points for every pound. Save fats in any kind of tin can. Never use glass fat in quickly. Here's a chance for you to make a real and valuable contribution to the war effort. And now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
You'll meet our stars informally after the play. But now the curtain rises on the third act of Jane Eyre, starring Orson Welles and Loretta Young.
All my doubts and all the grim shadows that hung over Thornfield Hall were shattered and gone. I loved and I was loved. Spring had come to the earth and spring had come into my heart. 2 weeks later, Edward and I were in the little church in the village. My hand in his, as now it would be forever. The minister had started the marriage ceremony.
Be assured that if any persons are joined together, otherwise and as the word of God allows, then are they not joined by God. Therefore, Edward Rochester, you, Jane Eyre, if either of you know any impediment why you may not lawfully be joined in matrimony, you do now confess it. Edward Rochester, wilt thou have this woman to be thy wedded wife?
Wait! I declare the existence of an impediment.
Proceed with the ceremony.
You cannot proceed. Mr. Rochester has a wife now living.
Who are you?
My name is Mason. On the 20th of October, 1824, Edward Rochester was married to my sister, Bertha Mason, at St. Mary's Church, Spanishtown, Jamaica. The record of the marriage will be found in the register of that church.
You swear you're speaking the truth?
I swear it. My sister is living now at Thornfield Hall. I have seen her there myself.
Parson, close your book. There'll be no wedding today. Instead, I invite you all to my house to meet Grace Poole's patient, my wife.
Seemed without end, our journey back to Thornfield Hall. On the way, we stopped to get Dr. Rivers. Edward insisted that he come back with us. And that is all I remember of the ride back. If words were spoken, I did not hear them. And then at length, I found myself with Grace Poole and the others standing again in the tower room. There was a clanking and unlocking of chains. A door opened, and the wife of Edward Rochester stood before him. Screaming, she flung herself upon him. Her clawing hands flashed around his throat. But she had no time to do him harm. Grace Poole and the doctor sprung upon her. And when they returned, the door was shut again and the chains fastened. Only then did Edward speak.
The woman you've seen is my wife. Mad. The mad offspring of a mad family. To whom the church and law bind me forever without hope of divorce. This is what I wish to have. This young girl who stands among you now, so grave and quiet at the mouth of hell. Look at the difference. And then judge me. Jane, may I come in? Jane, I did not even know her. Jane, I was married at 19 in Spanish Town to a bride already courted for me. But I married her. Gross, groveling, mole-eyed blockhead that I was. Jane, hear me. I suffered all the agonies of a man bound to a wife at once intemperate and unchaste. I watched her excesses, drive her at last into madness. And I brought her back to England, to Thornfield. Jane, I did everything that God and humanity demanded. Then I fled from this place. My fixed desire was to find a woman I could love. A contrast to the fury I'd left here. And what did I find? An actress in Vienna, a milliner in Naples, a countess in Warsaw. Back in England, I rode again in sight of Thornfield. Someone was walking there. A strange, elfin-like creature. Frightened my horse and then came up and gravely offered me help and her hand. And then, later that evening, Jane, do you remember? Say you remember, Jane.
I remember.
You came into that room. How shy you were. And yet how readily you answered my surly questioning. Then you smiled at me. And in that moment, I knew I'd found you. Jane, can you forgive me?
I do forgive you.
And you can still love me.
I do love you with all my heart. I can say it now. This is for the last time.
Jane. You mean to go one way in the world and let me go another?
Oh,
stay with me, Jane. We'd be hurting no one.
Oh, we should be hurting ourselves.
Would it be so wicked to be near me?
I'm
would
leaving,
it?
I'm leaving, Edward. I'm leaving, Charlie. You know that I'm not.
You will not be my comforter. Please. My rescuer. Jane, my deep love. Frantic prayer. I've been nothing to you.
Goodbye, Edward. Goodbye, and God bless you. Keep you from harm and from wrong.
Jane. Jane. Jane.
Going nowhere, I had nowhere to go. Without references, I could find no employment. I soon intimately knew hunger and unsheltered nights. And at last, without hope or help, I turned like a beaten dog back to Lowood. Mr. Brocklehurst forgot his word never to open his doors to me again.
So you're back here, penitent and humble, I suppose, pleading for mercy and prepared as ever, I dare say, to return our favors with your accustomed deceit.
If there is a place for me here, I am ready to beg for it.
You would like to become a teacher here?
Yes, sir.
Need no teachers. We have need of a girl in the scullery. Do you want it or not?
I'll stay.
Get in the kitchen, then.
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
Wait. Some months ago, I had repeated inquiries at your whereabouts from Mr. Edward Rochester. Obviously, I was unable to assist him.
I know no Edward Rochester.
I didn't ask you. Makes little difference if you do or not. In his last letter, thanking me for my kindness, he said he was leaving England forever.
The summer passed. It was fall again, and then, one day, the watchman's wife came looking for me.
Jane, there's a gentleman to see you outside in the court.
I don't want to see him. I don't want to see anyone.
I told him you'd come right out.
Then tell him you were mistaken.
Oh, girl, girl. Living all to yourself. Killing yourself in this cheerless place. Send him away if you want, but at least see him.
Who is he?
A doctor, Rivers.
Oh. Thank you.
Jane, it is you.
Yes, Dr. Rivers.
But you look, oh, forgive me. Have you been ill?
I mean no rudeness, Doctor, but you're not here to inquire about my health.
No, Jane. I'm here at the request of a friend.
How did you know I was at Lowood?
I didn't. But I've been trying to find you. I received a letter about you the other day. My friend asked if I, in my journeys about, would inquire after you.
Oh.
Well, I happened to see that villain Brocklehurst.
Have you answered your friend?
How could I, Jane? I've just found you.
You haven't found me, Doctor. You tried, but no one knows where I am.
Edward is back in England, Jane. He's at Thornfield Hall again. He searched for you everywhere.
Oh, I beg of you, tell him nothing.
But why, Jane, why?
No one knows better than you. Why?
Yes. It's for you to say, Jane. If you'd rather I didn't answer him at all, well, then I won't.
Yes, I would. I would rather you didn't answer him at all. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Jane.
Boy, night after night, I started to hear it.
Jane.
I struggled to shut my ears from it, but I could not. It was like a soul in pain, a wild, urgent cry, more than I could bear. I would see him again, speak with him again, and after that, I neither knew nor cared what happened to me. All I knew was that I must go, and go quickly. I reached the estate, but Thornfield Hall was no more. Fire had destroyed it all. I was staring at the pile of charred and blackened rubble when Mrs. Fairfax saw me. She came running from the gardener's cottage.
Jane! Oh, my poor, poor girl.
Mrs. Fairfax, what happened?
It was she who did it. She killed Grace Poole as she slept and set fire to Thornfield. Her laughing roused us. I ran to the nursery and carried Adele to the garden. As I stood there, I heard the laugh again. She was on the roof. Mr. Edward was just coming from the house. He said nothing, but turned and ran back into the flames. I saw him get to the roof and make his way toward her. She saw him, too. She ran to the edge and jumped. When we reached her, she was dead. And Edward! As he was coming down, the great staircase fell.
Oh,
Mrs. Fairfax?
Yes, sir.
What the devil are you doing? Adele is waiting for a supper.
I'm coming, sir.
There's someone with you. Who is it? Who are you?
It's I. Edward. I've come back. Oh, my beloved.
Her small, soft fingers. Her hair. Her little flower, soft face.
Her heart, beloved, her heart.
Jane, all you can feel now is pity.
Oh, no.
I won't have your pity.
Edward.
You can't spend your life on the ruins of a man. You're so young, so fresh.
Oh, don't send me away. Please, Edward, don't send me away.
You think I want to let you go?
No.
Oh, my beloved.
The months went by. He came to see the heavens once more. To see first the glory of the sun, and then the mild splendor of the moon, and at last, the evening star. And then one day, when our firstborn was put into his arms, he could see that the boy had his own eyes as they once were, large and brilliant and black.
That applause invites the return of the two artists who gave such distinguished performances tonight. Loretta Young, whom we've presented many times before, and Orson Welles, who has made his first appearance in the Lux Radio Theater tonight.
It's a pleasure to be back, Mr. DeMille. My, isn't the stage just crowded with producers tonight, hmm?
Oh, just... just two, Loretta. Mm. Orson and myself.
Well, that's what I say, and that's an awful lot of producers.
Well, I'm not a producer or director this week, Loretta.
No?
I have been doing everything CB says, almost.
Well, I must tell you, Orson, that I have a son who thinks you are the greatest director in Hollywood.
Well, it must be terribly lonely for him at your house.
No. You have other admirers there, too. Now, I personally...
Oh, this I've been waiting for.
I personally think Loretta Young is one of the loveliest stars in Hollywood.
Yeah, you took the words practically out of my mouth.
Thank you, kind sir. And now, I don't want to hurt your feelings, Mr. DeMille, but I would like to say that I've used Lux soap for years, and I think it's a delightful complexion care.
Well, words like that are good for my morale, Loretta.
Uh-huh.
Especially from you.
Thank you.
You know, Austin, I was going to say that I've always thought you were a fine actor, but I don't think I'm qualified to give an opinion on your directing. How long have you been in pictures?
Since I was 25.
25, yes. I'm afraid I haven't been in the business long enough. I didn't start until I was 32. Of course, I was more or less the Orson Welles of 1913.
Well, you never can tell, Mr. DeMille. Orson may make it all even by becoming the Cecil B. DeMille of 1970, huh?
I must remember to get some hair tonic.
Well, if my hair is standing on end this week, Orson, it's because Gary Cooper and I have the double opening of The Story of Dr. Wassel this week, both here and in New York.
Well, you've made a picture before, C.B.
Yes, 60 or 70, somewhere in there.
Relax, sonny. It'll come out all right. Now, seriously, C.B., I've enjoyed working with you immensely. Have you got a script set for next week?
Yes, Orson. And I think it'll be very good news for our audience. Because next Monday night, the play is Victor Herbert's great musical hit, Naughty Marietta. And our stars, well, at long last we're presenting one of the most famous teams of in motion picture history. Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy. They starred together in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, and next week we have them in this gay drama with those unforgettable songs by Victor Herbert.
Oh, I know it's going to be a wonderful evening, Mr. DeMille. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Good night. Good night. Evening to remember for a long time. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy in Naughty Marietta. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Tonight, we salute the National Association of Retail Grocers meeting in Chicago. They make this plea to consumers. Buy only the food you actually need. Give ration stamps for every bit of ration food you buy. Pay no more than ceiling prices and see that no edible food is wasted. Orson Welles appeared through the courtesy of the makers of Mobile Gas. Loretta Young's next picture is the Paramount production, And Now Tomorrow. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers.
Three bells for three great shows. Same time, same station. Listen tomorrow night at Lux Time for George Burns and Gracie Allen. Listen Wednesday night for Frank Sinatra singing Where or When. Jane Wyman will be Frank's guest. This time, Lux Time, every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
And this is your announcer, John M. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy in Naughty Marietta.
She tried new Easy Mix Fry, and he said,
What a cake. Your best ever.
She tried new Easy Mix Fry, and she said,
What a shortening. Almost mixes itself.
You try new Easy Mix Fry, and you'll say,
It's amazing. Spry gives me lighter cakes that stay fresh longer.
Buy Spry at your grocer's in the same handy jar. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.